when we went coming in, thank you very much for having that also. We can start the presentation. Yes, but I do have this a guidance to give that it is going to help us if we go straight to SASA, because we've been discussing social development, and then later on the other agencies must get ready, that's the NDA, and then as we proceed with that, we're still going to see how we manage our program going forward. I am believing something we believe in. Our service delivery improvements during that time, I think the biggest one was the improvement of our local offices. Capacity building, particularly at level 5 and 7. The largest number of staff after the almost 10,000, and we think 9,000, more than 9,000 are full, are level 5 and 7. These are people you find in local offices who do grant applications. And obviously, EBWP made an aggressive drive. Initially, to do an application took anywhere between 3 to 5 process steps. Now we have rounded that off to a 4-step process with uniformity across the country. Because when I arrived in 2011, we would have hardly taken applications through a 5-step model and have changed it into a 3-step model. Because that dictates to how many people should be in the pipeline to serve people in order to have the application complete. During that year, we had an unqualified audit, because that was a challenge of the previous year. It was scope limitation. In the following financial year, re-registration was indeed the most significant event of that year, as well as the migration to new payment systems with a smart card and biometrics. And during that year, we had face-to-face encounters with 20.7 million citizens. I want to explain this. There are just under 16 million grants. But if Google can't fetch her own grant, she'll ask her daughter-in-law or a relative in the house to fetch it. So we have to have records, biometric records, not just of the Google who granted these, but also of the person who collects on his or her behalf, in this case, her behalf. And so we have to have records of both, and that is why we saw 20.7 million people. And the reason to see them was to do really integrity data and cleaning, to make sure that there were real people at the end of a grant, that we were not just paying our grants without making sure that there's a life certificate for each. But we also used the moment that we saw people was to get their ticket documents, was to get a copy of their ID, was to enroll them in terms of their fingerprints and make sure they've got a stack of cards. Fraud management, and I will show a slide later just to give you an understanding of fraud management. So it went from the SIU, which only looked at beneficiaries who were taking, to staff who were actually involved and syndicates who are involved in fraud. During 2012, we worked on the mock-up for a SACSA uniform so that people can know who they are in serving them. Sometimes that's an office or a paper is very difficult to distinguish all of us in doing our work, and people not even sure at times who actually is their second 5 or 10 rand from them. And we wanted to clear that up, so we worked on the SACSA uniform. You will see during the 2013-14 year, we had to go on the data that we collected, the re-reg data, and follow up, because there were almost at that point 900,000 grants that were left. We had to check whether people did not hear about us and know that to come forward, and in order, as you've seen, we've reduced that, because a lot of those children who came off the system are starting to come back, and that number has now gone over 700,000. But it did realize a saving of 2 billion rand through mainly voluntary cancellations, where children did not exist, but they were in payment, and various other issues that we currently investigating to see if there was fraud. The payment model, that is when SACSA takes over payment. The Ministerial Advisory Committee was appointed during last year. They are tying up the initial report to present to ministers how they see the solution to roll up, and this will obviously follow with the next piece of work, which will be work streams work, waters, okay, deep rural areas, and during the period freeze of the city. We did review to do land certificating in the last financial year, but we stopped the process because it really confused a lot of our older customers, particularly in light of the fact that, you know, the universalization of the older person's grant in 2016, and we thought for a while we should give older persons and people trying to get to us an opportunity to understand the processes and communicate far better with our customers, because at the time we were also trying to introduce voice biometrics. We want to biometrically enroll every staff member in Rasmus. Because currently they operate on passwords, so the internet system to make an application on behalf of a client with a password. When we have fraud and we try and find out who used whose password, it sometimes is so difficult. So someone says, I'm in the bathroom, I wasn't there, I was on lunch, I wasn't operable on the system. So we believe that in the award of the team in this coming year, we'll position ourselves for yet another barrier to fraud. And the unqualified audit is in white, so we are still waiting the outcome of the audit, which will be in this month. In terms of the beneficiaries we serve, Honourable Chair, you will see I've given you census data, but the important thing to know is 50.8% of the population receives grant attention to the tune of 15.9 million. And on the next page, we have broken it down to the grant types to give you an understanding of growth or where they haven't been growth. You will see a lot of minuses in this table. And this was because of re-registration. We established an integrity data system, so you have to look at what your starting numbers were. And because so many grants were cancelled, it obviously affected the normal growth rates that we would have had. So you will see with war veterans, this is obvious because it's old wars, the Korean Wars and the First and Second World Wars. People obviously are passing on. Disability, you will see a decrease, and constantly look at this because there are temporary disabilities that are perhaps only for 6 months. And lots of our people complain about this, and we need to look at co-locating with health. So we have better tracking if you are constantly on your bed for what it is. Because at the moment, it's a secondary step on how disability is assessed by a doctor, not by a SASA official. And there's lots of contestation, and that's why most of the appeal matters that go through the appeals in DSC is on disability at the time. Granting aid has grown. This is where it's an additional amount of money gets paid to either a pensioner who needs someone to at least assist them in some small way. It is the value of 350, but it does help in certain poor neighborhoods where Gorbun needed that little assistance for someone to help her to do some shopping for her, to help bathe her sometimes. There are carers who don't get paid at all in our community, and but they are helping out our people. But Gorbun receives this additional money and she has to pay the person. Foster care, this has been an issue for us, that these are court orders made to assist them between justice and social development. SAP is just the pay agent on behalf of DSC. Child support went down by 1.9% because of the re-registration program. The bulk of the people who did not come forward to re-register were children. Because the mother would come with two children and she perhaps was getting money for three or four. There was a lot of deaths registered during the re-registration process of children, which we noted as well. In terms of our strategic plan, chairperson, our vision obviously is to be a leader in the delivery of social security services and obviously to administer a quality customer-centric social security services to those who actually are eligible and potential beneficiaries. Our slogan has always been, once they're the right person, the right grant at the right time.
the money, and 60% drew their money there. Now we can actually go to an ATM, and we can go to certain stores that are registered in the system of payments. We are obviously doing some snapshot surveys to understand what are our people's preferences in drawing their money as we go forward in improving our system. We have to develop a new payment system, because it's a mandate, whether it's 2017 or 2019, depending on circumstances, and we'll talk about that. But SACNA was set up not just to do applications, was set up to do applications and payments. So that is an inevitability that will come to us, but we have to gear up to do that. In terms of our outcome-specific goals, to reduce income poverty by giving social assistance, the objectives obviously are to provide social assistance. We found that there were certain areas in the child support grant, and we've looked at research together with UNICEF, particularly in the 0 to 1 years, that means children are just being born, we found that the take-up was very slow. And then we found in the 16 to 18 years, the take-up was also very slow. And we found that the reasons for this, that some parents actually believed their children were not yet proved, that they could not come forward. It is a constitutional right. So again, it speaks to indicating we do want our children all to remain in school. I think this is an important feature of our country's skills development. But even if a child is not at school, and the child between the ages of under 18 years, they still qualify for a child support grant. But we'd also like to keep on encouraging our children. And this is the collaboration that we want to have with social development sector to encourage our children to do that. The reduction in inclusion errors, the reevaluation of the first foundation to do that, but we also have that people use incorrect means testing. At the moment, there's a means test until 2016 for all older persons before they can get the grant. We have to see that income, pensions from other places, what is the impact of that on them receiving perhaps not the full amount, half a quarter, so they would be entitled. In fact, over 2 years, even government employees in the first two layers of government who were getting a government pension, we contacted them because we felt that they actually did qualify for a part of this pension. Because every year the amount is also reduced. In terms of the qualifying, at the moment, 15.9 million people are benefiting from the grant, as I said earlier. And usually the take-up rate is basically over 1 million per annum. It was 1.3 in 2013-14, with an attrition rate of 700,000, but that was also due to the re-registration process. And we generally focus on that, because the people who come off is people who pass on. But there will also be temporary disabilities. Children who turn 18 on foster care or child support, these are people who come up with systems a year as we take on more. Obviously, we will do everything in our power to extend our services to go from the 15.9 million grant to over 16 million in the 2014-15 financial year. Social relief of distress. And I think it's important to emphasize what social relief of distress is about. There are different types, and I think people get confused. There's also vouchers and food parcels, not just food parcels. But social relief of distress is awarded to families where a child is suffering from malnutrition. That means we will be engaging in conversations with health. It started off almost 2 years ago in a place called Mokopong, where a doctor at the hospital said to us, 4 children are dying in a very short space of time daily as a result of malnutrition. We went into that area and we looked at it, and more as we went into the first of the 1,300 wards, we discovered levels of malnutrition and stunting amongst our children. And in order to respond to that, we anymore. Now we say that we'll feed for 3 days and hope that the situation would have reduced or re-established. We've had incidences of Khayelitsha. We currently have incidences at the moment on Wangle in Somerset where it's taken more than 3 days before feeding has stopped for the various hardships people have endured. We also give FRD to people who are waiting for grants. Now the grant waiting period is 21 days, we want to reduce that to 10 days. But if you are waiting for a disability grant, because you have to see a doctor, it sometimes goes into 6 or 8 weeks. During that time, we will give people either a voucher or a food parcel, because you will understand the health status is already diminished. If we take medication, if they have no food chairperson, this would be absolutely difficult for them. In terms of the inclusion and exclusion errors, I said before that the under one was a problem, and you'll see that at least only 50% of young people, because I know there's this perverse incentive that people always say to us, that young women are having babies to get onto child support grants. And then we look at the facts, Jefferson. For us, we have to look at the facts. If that be the case, then we would have at least more than 50% of the first year coming and registering for this grant. At the moment, it's still only just in the 50% range of all the new births that come forward for grants. We're reviewing our backlogs in FOSTERCARE as a project together with our SOLS and DSC, because where court orders have elapsed, this is a court order, we must then look at how to continue paying whilst the child is still under 18. And also with foster care, if the child is in an institution, a learning institution, and even if they're 19 or 20, they're still entitled to foster care. But we need a social worker's report to assist us with that. So those are some of the targets we're looking at for the inclusion of our grant. As I said before, we thought it's deep rural that wasn't getting the grant, and then we discovered it was areas like within the Western Cape, certainly informal areas, within Gauteng particularly. So the Western Cape and Gauteng came up as the areas where we had 17 to 18-year-old kids not on child support grants, and we have to look into that situation to include them. So in order to improve our service delivery, you would have heard mentioned before, Mikonzu is one of our key outreach programs that we embark on. It's not just a program where we parachute in, it's a program that does profiling, it does dialogue sessions, it does action research, it engages people over a period of time before we actually arrive there to have the formal Imbizo format, so that community can engage in what were the issues they wanted us to know in terms of service delivery. Our most recent one was Marikana on Sunday, and people there spoke a lot about health issues they were uncomfortable about, that they more service points needed and queues for certain services, and the informality and water was a certain issue. So some of those issues we had to write to other ministries to inform them that this is what we need. But we try to involve particularly the mayors and the councillors in our program so they can hear firsthand some of the issues. For us, our involvement is about ETD and where the children are getting child support grants in the main, looking at older persons, whether they are being serviced, because sometimes it's about documentation. That's why people don't come forward for our service. So the ICROP program is very important. Our aim for this year is to do 420 ICROP visits. We obviously want to improve our turnaround time with new applications, and we're working very to put it in such a way that a person comes in for an inquiry, this is how they can track it, like a queue monitoring system with boards. I should say this is what each desk represents in the value chain of making an application. If we look at the National Payment Database, as I said before, we now have captured data for 20.7 million people. That is full biometric 10 fingerprints. We have something like 7 million voice prints. This is still not resonated very well with our community, so we're still doing work on how to use that. Some of our older persons have told us that when they call, it's too many numbers. They must have their ID number. They must have their bank account number. They can't deal with so many numbers. So we will have to look at a way to enable this biometric, because the point is to check biometrically before payment to reduce fraud in our system. So currently what we do, we're loading the data, we're preparing ourselves, we're doing what we call like a data factory, so that we have clean payment data as we move to our future. We will give a stat at the very end on fraud stats, because I know that was an issue raised. We also want to obviously, as I said before, authenticate the staff working on all our systems, not just top 10 guard systems, but also our financial systems. Because in the past year, one of the general managers in the province we found was fraud, defrauding our system. And it's a very senior post. And our zero tolerance, in fact, just 2 days ago, 12 workers were again suspended. And this will go through the lengthy court process, and we'll show you that. We want to develop an in-house system for the management of beneficiary biometric information together with Home Affairs. At the end of the day, the biometric data must be stored on an automated system. So we run our system against Home Affairs. I must say, out of the re-reg, we have an 88% veracity on the fingerprint. The 12% we currently still working on in cleaning up our data together with Home Affairs. We want to obviously automate scanning in the data. As of when I write, the application form was about 21 pages, now 5 pages. We do believe that if we automate the application form, we will invest less in the paper we currently use within the organization. We have warehouses with files upon files upon files. So this year, our concentration to automate will be, what is the minimum paper the auditor general needs, and how can we scan in that information so we have electronic data, but also as a backup, because we had a fire in one of our warehouses that destroyed almost 1 million files in case they attend last year. In terms of the future payment system, the Constitutional Court ruled the tender that was awarded to be constitutionally invalid on 2 points, which was the BE within this company wasn't thoroughly checked because the agreement was with the company that we awarded the tender to, and they said we should have drilled down into that company because of issues of BE companies not being in the management of certain companies. Those things what we should have done. Also, they found the business notes 2 to be vague because it says biometric was in enrollment, but it said biometric should also be in payment. And then in isolation, they felt that that was vague. The Ministerial Advisory Committee is almost at the end of their work already in providing minister with advice on what systems we will require and for SACS to do the full mandate. We will obviously set up work streams in the coming months to give effect to the actual work and no longer the thinking around the work. That's what we will do. We've had an expert roundtable hosted by the EU on our behalf for the Ministerial Advisory Committee, where experts from other parts of the world have come to share their experiences in social security with us. What we are having to do because of the Concord instruction is currently involved in going out on tender again. For the 4 or 5 years, we had asked when we went to court, could it be for 3 years for us to stay in town with our 2017 takeover date? The court said no, 5 years. But the court also, in understanding the separation of functions and powers, said that we must start on tender, but it's SACSA's choice at the end of the day whether to award a tender or not, depending on where we are in the process. And I just provide the committee with some of the phases in our work as we move towards SACSA being able to pay out itself. In terms of, I've spoken to the outreach program, so I'm not going to do that again. But just in terms of SACSA's future starting, at the moment, as I said before, the application stops. In the future, we will need ICT stops. We'll need payment stops. So those are the types of staff, and we're also exploring bursaries to attract young people, those who are qualified already and unemployed, but also final year students in these subjects, that we would see what is the potential of supporting them for their final year and then offering them a job when we're ready to do that work. In terms of the key projects for 2014, the types of projects we're looking at, obviously the payment in, and it's not 10 million shares, it is possibly 8 to 10 billion. We're not sure at this time as regards to tender exactly what the amount will be. Because what we'll tender for is not what we tender for exactly last time. Because we've already done the enrollment and people have cards already. Automation, the biometric access, I told you about that, is access to the building and also access to the system, the scanning of documents in terms of automation. The CDG exclusions and foster care reviews, these are special projects. An organizational review, we will have to look at our structure if we have to bring in other type categories of staff to see that the current 9,000 staff, is that warranted for what we are going into the future? I don't think there'll be an opportunity to fill in the current environment. Treasury keeps on saying we must be careful with our staffing numbers. We have to keep that down. So there would have to be job evaluation to make sure that we've got the right starting level in SACSA as well. Letters, grant letters, we will take over from the SIU, the debtors book. This is a very serious thing. Over the years, people who have paid, overpaid in grants become debtors. And there were people who were getting grants who shouldn't, they become debtors. So the SIU has run up a very large acknowledgement of debt book, which they'll be handing over to us. So we have to gear ourselves up, because we can't be the debtors department. We are the grants department. So we'll have to look at probably a co-source model, because we will have to clear that and not make that part of our core business to such a large extent. But that is a project and it is a worrying factor in SACSA when we take over from that, from the SIU. I spoke to the board already, chairperson. In terms of, do you want me to go straight into financial strength, if I can? Shall I? Good. In terms of the financials, we have given you a breakdown from the 2011-12, and you can see the trajectory of the 6 billion rand, the administration money that we get from DSD to run SACSA. You will see in the 2014-15 column, there's a minus 10 million rand. These adjustments were...
Sorry, ma'am, to interrupt. The majority of us don't have this in our... They're all printed as blank pages. So if we are going to need copies of those, if I may just ask the speaker just to go through this slowly, because we don't have anything to see. That is printed all as blank pages in our copies. Thank you.
In fact, if we could further try and find a way out, if we can't get a final document of that particular page.
Can I say to you, we'll get them printed ASAP. I'm not sure how that happened. It was one presentation we said. But we will get that printed by the admin straight away whilst I'm speaking. Will that help you, Chair? So within the next 15 minutes, they will bring each member a copy for their personal use. Would that help, Chair? Thanks. Reply, please. Could you send someone, please? To get that done, I'll continue. In the 2014 financial year, you see that the administration sorry, if you were wondering why there was such a large amount the year before. Inflation is 6.6%, but you'll note that it's a 4% increase on the previous year's allocation. In terms of the allocation for economic classification, the bulk of our money goes to goods and services. Why goods and services? That is the $2 billion that is paid to the service provider to pay out pensions is within that 3.9 billion rand. COE, that's the cost of the starting, is 2.5 billion rand for the more than 9,000 workers of SASA. You'll see transfers and the capital is far lower. The bulk, the cost drivers are in fact just starting, and within the goods and services, the payments for pensions. There are further classifications, but I'm just going to move on while getting members, hopefully. I'm at page 35, please. Thank you. I spoke about the baseline and the CPI and the inflation. And in terms of our annual financial statement, which is still in the auditing process, SASA had come from a declining situation to a healthy situation where we have 1 billion rand, but this is to take us to the automation that we require in order to facilitate. The point is not to spend money just because you have it. It's to spend money on what's required for the future. So our point is, for example, we said we wanted a fleet of cars, and these are ones off, so we took it out, so we're taking it out of this allocation. In terms of the automation, it will be taken out of this allocation, it won't be out of the straight line budget. And then go straight to page with the postage fund, two pages, thank you very much. This is just to unpack the cost drivers for 2014-15 for the 6.5 billion rand. Again, it's the COE audit cost bursaries. Those are bursaries awarded to staff currently on a wide range of different, every department has bursaries. I spoke about also bursaries we're looking at in the future for ICT specific staff and payments. The cash handling fees is there. 1.9 out of the 2 billion we pay to CPS. Leases, this is wherever we have offices. As I said before, the leases for the 365 offices. And the software licenses, we have to have those. And there's a wide range of cost drivers, maintenance and repairs and so on, and travel that we use in our business. And I'll go straight to the special project page on 40. The improvement of the conditions at local offices. We put aside 33 million for this because the most important thing for us is the long queues outside an office, the lack of appropriate seating, where toilets aren't disability friendly because of the buildings, the ramps. One thing we've got to get straight is they put ramps in, but they put it very high in. You're not going to be so happy. We're going to have to make sure the gradients, so literally we're making them, so that at the plateau to which people, I come to some of our offices, and it's so steep, if you were in a wheelchair, you'd roll back. So it means that some of the work will have to be redone. So we will obviously look at this in future to try and... I think that infrastructure, ICT infrastructure is the most important. If your system is down in SASA, our people will wait for the application through the stocking system. The infrastructure upgrades are always important in SASA. The biometric system, this is the enrollment of staff, but we want to go beyond getting into a building, we want to do systems enrollment as well, so that will take some more money. The new payment model. This is, we will get a report, as I said, from the Ministerial Advisory Committee, and then the work stream will be unpacked. And obviously we will get some consultants involved as well, including SASA staff and DSD staff in the work stream, as well as Treasury. For some of the functions, process. We will first look at government people before we bring in people from the outside to participate in our work stream. The ICOP we closed, and we put 18 million aside for that. Transportation of files, this is very important. We have so many offices, but the file that's to be brought from a local office to a district office, to the head office, to the filing system, which is a warehouse system at the moment. I think when we start automating, we'll reduce our need on this kind of transportation that we currently still do. And obviously, pay point development. There are still a few pay points, and it's a sadness that I have to admit this. There are still some pay points in both KZN and Eastern Cape, which are outside a shop, not in a physical building, as we would prefer, and this will be our target during the financial year, to sweep through all those areas where we haven't upgraded pay point infrastructure. Again, a pay point could perhaps only be used for one day or for 3 hours, but we recognize the dignity of our people, and therefore we'll have to find a place in order to have a pay point established. In terms of the risk and challenges, contractors, the payment tender, because it's so much money here, we always figure that there will be a challenge. Whether people win it, don't win it, there will be a challenge, because it is a lot of money, the tender. Then the declining resources. Saxon's paid at the 6.5 turnaround now, and it seems to be declining. And as we go forward to pay our grants ourselves, we would have to negotiate with Treasury. Because ultimately, the transaction cost will be reduced. But not in the first year that we take over, because obviously that's a CapEx year. But as we go into that process of taking it over, it has to reduce the transactional cost of paying grants. Fraud, theft, and corruption, we'll just show a slide on what's happened in the period on that. Disaster management. More and more communities, as a result of global warming and challenges and where our people live, are affected by too much rain, fires creeping through informal settlements. And we're having to feed for longer and longer in the community more than we did before. And these are some of the challenges around that. We also have to have disaster management for our registries and when we file against those two-pronged issues. Our reputation, we'll have to protect our reputation far better than we are. Staff, when they disgruntle, they take to doing what they want to. And I think it's all about their zero tolerance to fraud that is sometimes a difficulty within SACFIT. The unintended consequences of the current payment system is the word deduction. Deductions, whether it is people buying cell phones, taking loans, deductions is the unintended consequence of the current system, which we'll have to look at. Further opportunities for us going forward is the universalization of the old age pension in 2016. Obviously, the universalization of the child support grant still being discussed. Other social security institutions are obviously starting to engage with that to assess whether that can assist in paying our money on their behalf, because that has infrastructure and those are opportunities. It is with that I recommend to this committee to note and support our key strategic program as part of our AGP and our budget for the coming finance. Thank you very much,
Jesus. Thank you. Jesus, there was a page on statistics for fraud if members, because it was a question, and I just put up the page to say that these were the numbers. Fraud was quite rampant, and no, could you go back to the numbers just like that? Thank you. 7,700 cases were received in 2012-13. Every year there's a carry through of cases who are not completed, because when you go into the justice classes, it goes into a court process. There's obviously suspension, then the arrest, then the actual court case. But just to say there are more than 100 syndicates still in the back end
information. Thank you very much. Can we then interact with the presentation? I will invite him.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I'll try and go a little bit slow. I've always been accused of that since grade one. I'd like to start with the last one, the unintended, one of my questions before you got in. It's a concern in my constituency, unintended consequences of the payment process. If you can just please explain that again, because that is a crisis. People receive grants and then apparently it's a rumor, mostly down is a rumor. There's such authorizes garnish orders and so on and so on. So if you can just explain that one to me so I can take it back to my constituency. Thank you. And then my other question is somewhere you've also mentioned that an amount of cash handling fee. That too, because people that have the option of withdrawing from the bank, they pay charges. Why could SASSA not make a special arrangement with the bank to not to waive that fee? Because it is a lot, any amount deducted from your grant is a lot of money for a local grant. What's the criteria on the care dependency grant? Because that's also a very, very contentious issue where many people feel because they are a quantity for something where they need assistance, that some people do qualify and some don't. So what's your criteria there, please? The biometric, as you can explain to me, in the rural areas, how is it working there? And then also the intensive effort to recruit people with a disability, what seems to be the challenge there? I can assist you to recruit quite a lot of people in that regard. Thank you.
Hola. Can I acknowledge you, Honourable Member?
Thanks, Chair. If you look at page 29, intensify outreach program, I think this is very, very important. If you go to page 14, whereby you tell us about your offices, which are not adequate. But here, I think the department can clarify us how are you intended to do this. Because I think this is a very, 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 very much important to our communities. Because we are dealing with people who can't even afford to buy a bread for the children. So let alone to expect themselves to travel to a local office. I'm very interested to get on this one. Another question, Chair. I think this is Comrade Chair. Another question, Chair, about this food parcel voucher. The time frame, because we have cases whereby we find that a mother is still waiting for the ID document from Home Affairs while the children are suffering from the ground. So I'm thinking if they are just qualifying to get those vouchers. So the period of those food parcels. The question of queues. I think the department must do something. It's very depressing. It's very depressing. You know from the first of each month when you see the queue.
The queues at the pension paper or the queues at the application, because I just need to clarify.
Yes, we are going to the education point.
At the paper.
Yes, okay. The education point. You know in Devon, I'm from Devon. I know for the fact there's a post office there. When you drive around there, you know you'll be very depressed. There are very, very long queues everywhere, in everywhere. The issue of big stores, where you also mentioned that it's one of the pain points. I think the department must also review that. Because in some of the big stores, they don't just allow you to withdraw your money, they want you to buy, especially in rural areas. I think you are disadvantaging our own people who are receiving this. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
No, thanks, Chair. I'll just be brief. What I have most around the budget, where are we now in terms of expenditure, in terms of protection? Where are we at 1%? So that we might see whether we are understanding or not. What I have.
That's very key, Chair. You need to
started?
No, I said just now the percentage, where are we? As we as I stand, where are we?
My approach is just to make it a dialogue. I just need to make sure I understand the question of the member. Is it expenditure? Because the expenditure is done quarterly, and today we did not bring the information in terms of expenditure of the first quarter because we changed the APP, so we might not be able to answer the member's question. Or is it, I just need to get expenditure, where are we in one form so I'm able to show them the member's question.
Can I protect you, Deputy Minister? Just leave it so that when you find time to respond, you actually align that to the program that will speak specifically to that, because now we're dealing with the actual budget. So the ones that has to, how far will we go? If you just put it in the right program so that when you respond, you okay, Honorable?
I'm okay with the direction.
Thank you.
Okay. There's the first one. Yes. Secondly, in terms of the goods and services, I see that SASA is spending 60% on goods and services. For me, it's really huge. If we can just get an explanation. Let me just ask an interesting question. I don't know whether how ready SASA is. I know it's not their core money. But I think sustainable development cuts across the entire party. Now you are spending so much money in offices, and also you are looking for office accommodation. How ready is SASA in terms of green development and efficient energy in this regard? Is it part of your plan? Or are you going to await environment to roll out this program? Now, the other thing is this, the cash flow. I know that I'm not a big brother or big sister, but in the magazine and newspaper over the weekend, there was an outcry in the Free State that, I'm sorry to mention the nationality, but there's a Chinese consumer. There are pain points. Many SASA officers in the Free State, where they are collecting about more than 40%. If an old woman borrows 500, she pays 800 or something. And also the question of the whole holding of ICE. I know it's a police matter, but is SASA making any intervention in this regard? Because my concern here, I know it's not part of the presentation, but I'm just making use of the opportunity here. It defeats the purpose of alleviating poverty, because the complaints that are there in the application, it's a cycle. Once you borrow one, you are forever in, forever. So are there any strategies to work with the law enforcement agencies and others to ensure that we avoid this kind of poverty threat that our members are involved in? Yeah, those will be basically just the
issues
and questions.
Yeah,
thanks.
Honorable. Thanks a lot, Chair. We're going to come out to my understanding. I'm looking at the SASA program. They must come to the service point. When it comes to questions, in the town, they speak about four. But in the service points in other provinces are high. And I like to speak to that, those service points. Because KwaZulu-Natal population is more than the Eastern Cape. But the Eastern Cape has 217. So let us just look at that point here. And then I want to speak about you before Gosasa comes a lot to us. But I'm not sure what is the color. Is that khaki uniform that they wear was. I'm not sure we have to speak, but you know exactly how this uniform looks. because they weekly in my constituency. You know, my office invites them. So that I could see that. And then there's just this one here. When it comes to socialism programs and implementation, children suffering from malnutrition, we are helping them, but what is your collaboration with our other departments, especially health? Then the students who are spoken to, and it's just this, you spoke to us on what our marketing price and our loss documents, on the compensation of employees that deny the change. And I see from the presentation there's still a vacancy rate of about 1,000. Now, I can understand why pension is on you at 59%. You know, because you have to be careful when it comes to 59%. For this, a norm within the public service that not adhere into 80% operational cost, 20% employees. And we got this anomaly throughout the public service, where we have a bloated public service. So I think it's going to be important for you to speak to that. I'm not going to speak about the loan sharks, because while sister, it was in the papers, and I think so, and we do have it in our communities, where you have the loan sharks standing at that point, that pay point. When we were in the, when I was that year in the committee, when we went to Faithpoint, that a person could see the loan shark there. And then the other thing is this, I know too this is, but CPF is offering loans to the beneficiaries. Now I know whether it's 40 years, or what, because I don't get a chance, you know, to meet the head of CPS, because when I see that he's not available for me. So I'm not, you know, that it's just a rumor, I'm not sure, but where there's smoke, there could be fire. Because you know the policy of social development is that when it comes to that pension, that's the key. You know, like that only funeral benefits could be subtracted. And then when it comes to like when it comes to re-registration that needs being done, I think I know it's about social development that spoke about this over radio. But sometimes we know how people in the deep rural areas don't have radio, and they come so happy that they have another department when it comes to, I think it's the post office, I'm not sure. This one that's really yes. Because what was interesting when it came to Northern Cape, delivery of LTSM, they lived with the post office. Because the post office is every day in that area. So, you know, you have to just speak to us about, you know, the post office. Why are you not using the post office? Then, the recouping of funds when it comes to fraud. It's a lot of money. What are you doing now? How do you get that money back once someone is sentenced? And then what does it take, Sasha, for the department is a universalization of the old age pension. Number 2016, I think that is very important. Because you can see the disappointment when people come to your office and then the man will say, my wife is a teacher and she's receiving that pension. But I'm not entitled to pension. And you know, our homes, the men say, even if we're working towards 50% and equality when it comes to women, they need a plus. You can see that on their faces, that disappointment. And like you say, I always send them back every year, don't check. And even when it comes to women, they say, oh, I'm a critical, I pay the pension, but my husband is in the pension. And he's in the pension, but not me. And with that woman, I just say, go back, go back, go back, and she's receiving something now. So, you know, that's the universalization. I think it's a very important aspect. But there's another one in aspect that comes to the constituency office. I've had more, but there's two pensions. You state clearly what are your increases. And it was pronounced by the minister. And we now see it will be, I'm not sure, but I think it's an unfunded mandate. But see the minister, because when it comes to my increase, it comes automatically. It comes to teachers automatically. But now pensioners are told by pattern in the Port Elizabeth office. You have to reapply for that increase. And we are glad to work that way. That you reapply for increase when something has to be given out automatically. Because what can happen, you have your projections, and suddenly 1 month, you just give out the pensioners, it was not being done. And then where do you sit when it comes to projections for the rest of the year? Thank you.
Don't see any more hands. So I will talk the ball back to the CEO. But CEO of SASA, I would agree with you in many, in actually acknowledging the hotspot where poverty is appalling, including very urban. But I can assure you that that poverty which you identify in the very urban is actually exported from rural communities, because they can't, when they arrive in a city, go any further. They will have to be stuck at the periphery level. But if you go out of the city, poverty starts to be at the periphery, then you go further, then at the center. Because of inaccessibility, I can assure you one analysis. I think the Department of Social Development is monitoring the implementation, the reduction of poverty, and so on. We have to take up its own research unit. Because I can tell you, when you say, because some intervention in terms of curbing those who are not supposed to be accessing, there were a lot who were not accessing afterwards that are not registered. And I can give you reasons. For some time, you would see those who don't deserve being the ones who actually access, and the deserving not having the actual ways of accessing. Because that information is always hoarded. And I don't want to accuse anybody, but there is collaboration between those who get it illegally and those who are supposed to be really deserving. But you have mentioned, one member, honorable member, has actually mentioned the appeals process, you said, that it actually removes some of the deserving. But the reasons that are there, the people who have lost access are the children who are born by women, who come from rural areas, work in towns, whether sugarcane, whether where, but when then they die in that process, babies are brought home, the father is not known, there's no death certificate, nothing. And that person is permanently not able to access it. Because wherever you go, you are required to produce the birth certificate or clinic card or all those things that are not available. And I think I'm raising believing that in the process of implementing our own policies in South Africa, we must also expect the extraordinary. The extraordinary. I know those who go and say, no, because she looks not as old as I look now. We say, no, no, I was born in 1958. But the best giving age is opposite to the fact that she is now getting a grant, but she's still having a child that is supposed to be getting a grant, and the two don't work together, that you are getting a grant because you are old. So once you are old, you are post that giving age, and you can't be coming bringing a baby as well while you are also getting a grant of being old. But that child continue to suffer because of that mistake that was created. It is therefore an advice to you, CEO, that we need to engage on more issues, especially of the rural areas. I know I've been to rural areas where no other person has ever been there. I'm honest with you. They say any government, whether it's a councillor, whether it's what, we are seeing a government person for the first time. And it's on record, it's clear, they've never seen one. And I can tell Deputy Minister here that when people didn't want to go and vote, we also discovered that this family lost a 4-year-old and reported to police. No one came. When they identified the child in one house, they were accused and then arrested. But the child, at the end of the day, only bones were found. But until today, there is no counseling, nothing that has ever happened to that, nor is the case being followed. This is not one case, many, many cases. So this problem we're dealing with is multifaceted, because you have those who can access, those where noise can be made about what is not normal, but there are those who have accepted in desperation and will die not knowing. I am therefore appealing to you that this grant thing, even these people who get this funds, there are still many. If you come with this, that their voices, their fingerprints, they come with something more sophisticated, because they have seen this as a way of life of defrauding what was meant for the poor. We are not accusing you, but everyone must work with SASSA to save government, because people see this as a cash cow. That is a cash cow, and actually not while these who are supposed to be drinking that milk go to bed hungry. So can I give you, I will support you in all the endeavors. We don't see that you're failing anyway, but we can see that you are also being overwhelmed by what is taking place out there, and what this government found in any way. But we inherited this, but we have to go on. So can you respond to these other members and cover any other area which you think was left, so that when you are through, we can go back to the Deputy Minister so that in your own presentation, you can say, we have exhausted what we thought we were bringing to you. And on our side, we also be saying, in fact, we have made our effort to find more information and a more way forward. So can we do that?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. In terms of the issue, I thank you for that attitude and understanding that it is a very broad, wide-ranging problem to deal with tension. But I must say, we are making improvements, but there are so many areas that require our attention. Unintended consequences. When we introduced the card, we brought it into the open loop. So what had happened, if you're transacting through a bank, that means if you have
call that ambush marketing. When people send you messages on your cell phone, you can use your SASSA card to buy these things. In most of the instances, we find that Google didn't even do it themselves. One of the children in our home has also done it. Because they get the messages on the phone, and they can see if you use the back numbers, like with any credit card, you can buy anytime. Now, we say to the service provider, the same CPS, we've written very strongly where the letters we've used, the Concord judgment in how it says, we've said, you may not. But the situation is, 26A says a deduction can happen for funeral expenditure. But what people do, these very companies, they have what they call a combination of loans and this kind of thing. People in the money financial products, they call it. They are selling so many things to people. I mean, one Google with six funeral benefits, and she said to die once. It's scary. So there's education, but there's also the unscrupulous. We work together with the National Credit Regulator, with the police. We've been involved in sting operations. For as much as the work we do, there's so much more to be done. That person, the Chinese dealer, is already on the list for the fraud people to go and investigate. He's got runners. There are at least eight women runners who run for him at different pay points. The point is, licenses are given by the Financial Services Board to companies to conduct business, including CPS. Out of the 44 companies of which CPS is one, NetOne has other companies to sell financial products. So it is an extreme challenge that we currently deal with. Minister has set up a task team. The task team chairs here. It involves other organizations also have the Black Sash participating in to look into this. They must present to Minister a report. And I'm not sure, Ms. McGuire, about when you'll be presenting that report.
Those comments are not a good chair. I'm sorry for that. The task team is still busy consulting with other stakeholders like MCR, Reserve Bank, and National Treasury. We envisage that at the end of July we'll write a preliminary report to the minister, but the work is still going to go for a while until we satisfy everything. It is a difficult situation, maybe as the CEO was mentioning, but we will come with a recommendation to the minister as to what is it that needs to happen after and doing everything that we could and talking to other people that are involved around it. It's a disease.
Thank you, Mr. McGrath. In terms of the cash handling fees and special arrangements with banks, we have gone to the Reserve Bank. We have asked them to speak with the Banking Council. In fact, people ask us every day, how can I get 100% cash back? So actually some of them started moving away from the bank account into the biometric point of sale device where they get their money back. The point is, Minister said in the scheme we're working on now, that the actual banking fee should be taken care of, and we will meet with the Reserve Bank quite soon to manage this arrangement for the current tender being involved in. So we are constantly looking at that. I'm going to ask Diane Dunkley to give the key dependency plus the grant in a criteria for getting these grants.
Thank you, Chair. For a care dependency grant, we give that to children who are younger than the age of 18, who are with a caregiver who is a South African citizen, permanent resident, or a refugee, and where the child is medically certified to require 24-hour care. So the child is severely disabled or seriously ill, and then the care dependency grant is also subject to a means test. And the limits of the means test for the care dependency grant, if the caregiver is a single person that is not married or divorced, then their income cannot be more than $162,000 a year. If they're a married applicant, then it can't exceed $324,000 a year. And that's the basic criteria for a care dependency grant, most important being the medical certificate that confirms that it is a permanent disability. It's not given for a temporary period. Because once the grant is given, it's given until the child turns 18. The criteria for a grant in aid is given as an additional amount of 310 rand a month to somebody who's already receiving an old age pension or a disability grant or a war veterans grant, where that person is so frail or so aged that they require another person to help care for them. So with the sort of basics of daily living, bathing, dressing, feeding, those kinds of things, they can then get a care dependency grant as an additional requirement to their grant. The grant in aid is not means tested because the primary grant, the old age pension, disability grant, and war veterans grant, is the one that is means tested. So if they qualify for that, even if they qualify for a reduced amount on the primary grant, if they meet the criteria for a grant in aid, they can get the additional amount of money. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thanks very much. Honourable Chair, what I will do, I'll ask the officer if they can bring you means test documents so you can understand the means test for each of our broadcasts. I think it would be good for the members to have that. It's an easy access document, and we will provide it to this committee. Because as many people as we can encourage to know the means test, it's really important because it helps us to engage our people, and everybody is a public official, and you should be able. It's not a secret document, that's my point. So we will provide it to this committee. In terms of biometric and rural, in the rural areas, our people prefer to go to a point-of-sale device at a merchant store that has a biometric, or to the pay point where the company brings the biometric tool to the place. So they're not experiencing difficulty. I think the only difficulty at the moment that we try to address is the voice biometric. And that is an education program, but also taking the pressure off the beneficiary and putting the pressure on us as officials. Because dropped calls, what all the people that said to us, we phone, and then, you know, there are many other calls in the line, they become a dropped call and they don't want to go through that experience. So for every problem that we have, we try to find a management solution that comes back to CBS or ourselves, but not to our customers. And so for a while, we're going to put out something in the media that says, if you've not contacted us, your grant won't stop. Because we must avert panic at all times. But just ensure our people that they get their money. In terms of 1.2% disability, that's the start. We like to take that over 2% in terms of our employment. What you have attrition when people leave you, and you can't hold on in that way. The point is, your policies should be enabling so that people with disabilities, particularly that we have the ability to appoint. But I'm sure together with the Deputy Minister, there are many strategies other than just put it in the newspaper that we will use. We will see the organizations here to get that done. ICOP is important, but also converting a service point into an office as a future plan is more important. But it depends on how many people come to the office. I know the member has pointed out some of the numbers not gelling. It's more about how many actual offices we have than service points. So we've got to convert. If some of the provinces had their way, they would table that, but it's also a cost issue for us. It must be in an organized way, but we must also do some transformation. We must connect where some of the offices are. They're inaccessible because they're in the city center, some of them. And that means where people should have them is closer to community. So this trajectory of reversing is the first important one, as opposed to just making offices, converting them. So I said, and what was the tendency was rather to have a service point in a poor community, but the office closer to town. And this must be inverted. So this is not a program that is this year. We're rolling it out. We're trying to reverse trends at the moment. And that is our plan, to convert it, but also to look at where the current office. For example, the Eastern Cape has got a lot of offices. But now when we try to close down some of them, people complained as well. And they said, but how can you close that office? We said, no, but that should be a service point, for example. So it is something you can't just take away from our people. If you've made them used to it, you have to do it in an organized fashion, informing beneficiaries, and we are doing it. In terms of, there was food parcels and ID. If someone's made an application, if you go to Home Affairs, you get a receipt. We give an application based on this receipt.
whole slide of the money coming into the city centre. In poor communities, grants is government money. It should at least cycle more than once in a poor community. So we should look at how we set up structures in future as part of the payment channel closer to where our people live. That's the only way you can reduce those queues, is to look at even the general dealers, but to see how accountable they'll be to get more of them into the system. That is our future. The post office is part of our future, but I think that's a future that could still come and present here on many occasions. Our first quarter budget, within 7 days after the first quarter's expenditure, the report becomes available. So I'm sorry to the member, it's not available yet, our first quarter expenditure. The goods and services budget is about paying out the grant. It is all at the head office. So the 2 billion rand is in that money that we pay CPS. It is in that money. That's what pushes that up. The others is ICT, your usual, all your other things. But the goods and services is about the payment to get grants paid. Is in that amount. That's why it's so much money. Sustainable development is important to all of us. In fact, as an interventionist state, we were part in cooperative development. I must admit to you, Chair, the member, that the green building thing is still not as priority as it should become, and I think we should look at it. Cash loans, we've talked about the debt, particularly incident for the DIN investigation. The withholding of IDs, as I said, the National Credit Regulator, we're looking at reckless lending. We have already caught several micro-lenders, but not enough for what's going on. It will need to be a larger scale operation. I mean, there are people here, the investigators can see to the things we set up, but it's still not enough. Because our people will say they do make loans. They do. And then DTI says to me, what do you want them to do? Because I think if we lift pensioners out of the open loop into a closed loop to protect them, and they said, do you want to stop poor people from making loans? Don't you think they have issues like everybody else? So I think there's also issues we must really look at. I think more importantly, it's who's making the loans, how much interest they're charging, and whether they're getting through the firewalls too quickly. What should we do to prevent that? That's the important thing for us. Uniforms. Guys, did you stand? You've got the uniform on. Thank you. We're rolling it out this year, ma'am. It's still being rolled out. There was a question on malnutrition and our collaboration with health. In fact, it's as a result of health that this program was rolled out. Doctors and clinics come to us and say, even schools, where teachers say this child can't concentrate because the child is malnourished. So we are working with education and with health in the identification of malnutrition. The bloated public service, we are a service delivery agency of government. Our job requires that we have people to engage with our people. So, whilst there is a staff establishment of 18,000, our aim is not to actually get to 18,000, but we will have to bring, if you look at how many staff CPS has to do payments, then it will require that we do get the additional staff if we have to do it, because we will save government, like health or education. If it's a human resource driver for the product to reach our people, that's the difference between us and administration officers who have the 80-20. So there are certain entities and departments in government that require different skill sets to do the job. But we will always JE, we'll always reduce it. We've got a lot of pressure on us at the moment. The long queues are as a result of people waiting to be served. So we have to actually get more out of our people, but we will require more staff as well. So I can't guarantee, but bloated, I don't think we will become. Re-registration, we agree. In fact, ministers asked us to do door-to-door campaigns in the poorest areas and not depend even on radio. And that will be our approach. Because you pay a lot of money to put ads in newspapers and you pay ads on TV or radio. Mm-hmm.
government employees and you've stolen money from us. There is your pension, but there's a process that we have to go through. There's a justice process for that, but we do. As I said before, we have a lot of debt, but people are written up as they acknowledge the debt. But there is fraud and corruption and there's money. We pay you after that, and that's what we do. There was just increases. No, you mustn't reapply for increases. We would like to know where that is, because the increase is automatic. The point is, if certain people are coming with their review of their means, that's a different thing, and how much they could. They'll say, I came to you, I got you, gave me half, and then shouldn't I get the whole amount? What happened? Why didn't I get my whole increase, etc.? That's the only time when there can be a problem with increase. Otherwise, it's automatic, and if there is an instance, we would prefer you report it. Thank you very much, Chair. I think I've covered all the questions.
Okay. I have none.
And we need the assistance as members, as
communities come to complain in your constituency offices, that we find a way of how you channel that information and how we make sure that that gets agency. The other issue is, I think I just needed to add on the biometric system because it is going to be a cost driver. As Home Affairs rolls out the smart ID card, the relationship between in terms of the population registry and the management of the beneficiaries, the SASA has to ensure that their biometrics are still able to talk to Home Affairs at the bankroll. So the interaction of the biometric system are also going to be informed by the rollout plan of Home Affairs. Then go back to it's the outreach program. And it's important. When I agree with you, Jay, like you, I arrived in a lot of these rural areas and they go like, yo, the first time we think I'm like you. So we will intensify our outreach program because the minister feels strongly about that. But also as we intensify the outreach program, we also will be utilizing young people in those communities. So it's about training the young people in those communities for them to do the door-to-door, the data capturing, and the profiling supervised by the social worker so that we are able to really implement. It will also help for members to assist us and for chair to assist us with those villages so we can retrace those steps, and that goes to all the members. Then as people that perform oversight, we rely on yourself also to bring to our attention communities in need through your constituencies, through your networks in whatever form, so that we are able to go where the need is most. We've used the municipal ICP to do the 1,300 most poorest municipalities, but in other rich municipalities, there are informal settlements, there's always the back room dwellers, and that tends to fall in the cracks and get lost in translation. So we really will need your help with that. I think the end is ready. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and members, Minister. We'll go through the presentation and we will present in terms of the ATP as requested, and we will conclude by zooming into the financial and close consideration. And I will, when I get to that part, I will request my CFO to speak to the financial. Just a minute, can I request that the members get a cup of something which is there and would like to be cold, but we will ensure that we don't disturb your process manner. Thank you.
Thank you. Moving to the next slide, the purpose of the presentation. Is to present to the committee in terms of the strategic plan and the annual performance plan. With regard to the role and the mandate of NPA, our mandate is expressed in terms of the National Development Act, which indicates that our mandate is to contribute towards poverty eradication and this causes by giving grants to civil society organizations so that they can implement development projects in poor communities, but also to strengthen the institutional capacity of other civil society organizations that provide services to poor communities. This mandate, therefore, we move on to the vision, saying that our vision is society free from poverty, and our mission is to facilitate sustainable development by strengthening civil society organizations involved in poverty eradication through enhanced grant funding and research. As we plan as the NDA, we follow the normal government
services, what are our strategic focus areas as the MDA in the next 5 years? Our strategic focus areas in the next 5 years are the capacity building of civil society organizations, but also the grant funding. And this grant funding will focus specifically on education development, but also on food security as well as income generation. We will be giving the grants to those civil society organizations that are operating within these three areas that I just mentioned. And who are we targeting in terms of this? We are targeting households, and particularly the poor households. We are targeting children, we are targeting persons with disabilities, women, youth, and other civil society organizations, including those that are working on gender-based violence. Those are our target groups that we focus on. The DG in the morning spent a lot of time talking to government outcomes, just to indicate that even ourselves as the National Development Agency, our work is aligned to what the DG expressed in the morning in terms of those particular outcomes of indicated outcome 1, outcome 4, 7, 5, and 13, which our work that I've just indicated as the focus area is aligned to those government outcomes. Moving on to the next slide, again, in terms of this slide, I'm not going to spend a lot of time because the DG in the morning spend a lot of time indicating how as a sector we are aligned to the social protection and HABDA, which guides our media transportation framework priorities. So we're just indicating that, as the NDA also, we are aligned to that HABDA, which guides our medium-term strategic framework priorities. Just moving now into our strategic plan for 2014 to 2019, our goals and goal statements, first of all, just starting with the outcome-oriented goals. Our goal is to increase capability of the civil society organizations that deliver development programs to reduce poverty, inequality, and unemployment. So as you can see, there is in terms of increasing the capability of the civil society organizations. And what we aim to achieve is to leverage resources so that we can increase the number of civil society organizations capacitated in institutional strengthening and technical skills from 690 currently to 14,000 by 2019. So we will move from 690 to 14,000 by 2019 in terms of capacity building. And I think this is important to note that because earlier on in the morning when social development was presenting, there was a question that was raised in terms of what actually do we do in terms of capacity building of civil society organizations. And as we indicated then, as NDA, we focus particularly on institutional capacity, that is strengthening those organizations, the civil society organizations and NGOs, so that they can deal with issues of governance and so forth, but also in areas of technical skills. The second outcome is to increase the resources towards poverty eradication programs and projects. And in terms of this, we will undertake research, evaluations, best practice publications, and policy dialogue to improve and influence policy direction for development practices. If we look at our mandate, we have what we call, in terms of the Act, the secondary mandate. And when we look at that secondary mandate, it indicates that we need to have dialogues with civil society organizations. We need to share best practices so that we can, civil society organizations, they can learn the best practices and replicate those best practices in undertaking development work to eradicate poverty. So hence we will be undertaking research and evaluation, as well as these best practices and publications as part of our work. Thirdly, we will, the other outcome is evidence-based information that informs development policy and programs. Part of our work as the NDA, again, is also ensuring that we inform development policy in the country. And we will do this by mobilizing 650 million rand in cash and in kind through sustainable partnerships towards building the capabilities of communities and households for self-reliance by 2019. As you will see later on in the slides, but also as it was indicated earlier in the morning, that our budget is 178 million rand. You will agree with us that if you look at 178 million rand, and you look at that in relation to the mandate that we have, so huge in terms of contributing towards poverty eradication, that amount is very small. And as such, we have taken a strategic direction of ensuring that we mobilize resources so that we can augment that amount of 178 million rand that we get from Treasury through the Department of Social Development. So it is important for us to make sure that we mobilize those resources in the next 5 years to the amount of 660 million rand. The next area is increased internal efficiency, cost effectiveness, and organizational sustainability. This outcome actually is inward looking. We are looking at our internal processes so that we can become more efficient and become more effective in what we are doing, so that we can ensure that there is indeed organizational sustainability. And to achieve this, we will strengthen internal systems and processes, as well as human capability, so that we can be able to deliver on our mandate as the NDA. So in the next financial year in the APP, what programs are we going to have? We have divided our work into four programs. The first program being capacity building, and the second program, and I will just indicate what we intend to achieve under each program. The second program is research and development, the third program resource mobilization, and the fourth program is governance and administration. When we look at program one, which is capacity building, the strategic objective is to expand access to capacity building interventions to civil society organizations in order to improve the quality of services that they deliver to communities. I must indicate that those civil society organizations that we build a capacity on are those civil society organizations that assisting or that are working as delivery agencies for social development, but even for other departments, as well as those that are working closely with us on other areas as the NDA. And actually, I can just indicate that in the previous financial year, we had a very good partnership with the Department of Social Development at provincial level, where we assisted them in training and strengthening the capacity of civil society organizations and NGOs that are working with the Department of Social Development, and
program through improving the infrastructure of ECD centers and technical skills of practitioners in poor communities. The objective statement is to increase the number of ECD centers meeting the norms and standards supported by the NCA from 298 to 375 by 2019. In terms of early childhood development, we are working very closely with the Department of Social Development because what is happening when the Department of Social Development identifies those ECDs that do not meet the norms and standards, we come in as the National Development Agency in terms of supporting those ECDs on those areas which make them not to meet the norms and standards. If, for example, you find that the practitioners within that ECD center have not been trained, we come in to ensure that they are trained up to NGF level 4. If, for example, they do not meet the norms and standards in terms of infrastructure, on a very minimal cases, we come in, we assist them around the issues of infrastructure. So we assist them work hand in hand with the Department of Social Development so that we can make sure that these ECDs that do not meet norms and standards, indeed they do meet the norms and standards. So our target in the next 5 years is to support 375 ECD centers that do not meet the norms and standards so that they can meet the norms and standards. The next area, strategic objective, is to provide support to food security programs through grant funding of food security related community-based projects to benefit poor households. And the objective statement is to increase the number of food security projects receiving grant funding from 303 currently to 475 by 2019. The aim is to ensure that those projects that are undertaking food security projects, they are given grants so that they can improve the area of addressing the area of food insecurity. The next strategic objective is to provide support to income generation projects and programs through grant funding for economic participation of poor households. And the objective statement is to increase the number of income generating projects and programs to 175 by 2019. This is the program where we aim to ensure that we address the issue of unemployment and we create employment opportunities. So we will be supporting 175 income generating projects. The next area is the next program is research and development. And what are the things that we will achieve under this area or this program, program two, which is research and development? First, we will, the strategic objective is to undertake research aimed at providing the basis for development policy and program implementation, focusing on poverty eradication, unemployment, and inequality. And what we will do under this strategic objective, we will conduct research that informs national policy, debate and dialogue, as well as best practice publications on development programs between 2014 and 2019. So we will be conducting research, and again, we work in partnership with other agencies that conduct research in this area. The second area under research and development will be monitoring and evaluating all NCA programs by 2019. And what we intend to be doing under this strategic objective, we will conduct monitoring and evaluation of all programs and projects undertaken by NCA to improve program performance between 2014 and 2019. And I can just indicate that currently the NCA has produced 585 project evaluations through monitoring in terms of midterm, close out, as well as close out.
facilities of communities and households for self-reliance. And we will do this through the objective statement, which is to increase the resources and mobilize towards implementation of development programs and strengthening capacity of communities and households from 80 million rand to 650 million rand in the next 5 years, that is by 2019. So currently we are at 80.5 million, which is the baseline. That's the amount of money that we have mobilized beyond what we get from social development as a transfer. The next program, which is the last program, program four, which is governance and administration. In terms of this program, the strategic objective is to develop and implement systems and processes to improve efficiency and effectiveness of the organization. And we will do this by maintaining sound governance and administration that promotes performance, employee development and growth, efficient financial management, and enhanced brand recognition from 71% to 90%. What we did in the past 2 years, we've been conducting a brand survey. That's to, because when we were visiting various communities, we discovered that some communities do not know us as the National Development Agency. And we've been conducting this brand survey just to understand to what extent do the communities understand the brand NDA, to understand us. And this has been the last brand survey that we conducted indicated that we are at 71%. So we are saying that in the next 5 years, we want to increase this percentage from 71% to 90% so that communities can begin to understand who we are, what we do, what our mandate is in the community. With all these four programs that I've just indicated and the areas that we are going to achieve under these four areas, the next slide indicates that we have 24 measures that we are going to measure ourselves in the next financial year in terms of the things that we are going to achieve. So if this committee wants to see the extent to which we have been able to achieve the things that we have just indicated, that I've just shared with you in the APP, you can measure us against these 24 measures that I've just indicated there. And this will make the life easy of the committee to see our work and measure our work. So these are things that I've just mentioned. So those two slides are just indicating those areas in terms of measures that you can use to measure our work in the APP. Let me pause there, Honourable Chair and members, and just allow the Chief Financial Officer to talk to the slide on resource considerations. Then we will take questions and comments. Thank you.
appointed with the Work Treasury will result in the proper funding of NDA going forward, and this is where we would appreciate the committee's support. May I end the Chairperson and hand over back to the CEO?
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair and members. Just as we conclude the presentation, I think from our side is really emphasizing the fact that when you look at the funding of NDA, it's very, very big. It's 178 million rand, which as you can see in the presentation there, that grows to 195 million rand for the mandate, which is in terms of contributing towards poverty eradication. It is very, we are looking for, it is very little. We are looking forward in the past few years. We know the National Treasury has not been increasing our transfer because it requested the review of NDA. That review of NDA has happened, and we are patiently or giving impatiently waiting for the outcome of the review so that we can begin to understand the way forward in terms of resourcing NDA, because this is the biggest challenge that we are facing. And we do hope that as we are having those discussions indeed between ourselves and the Department of Social Development, and we will begin to look at those areas that are duplicated both at NDA and at the Department of Social Development. I think in the morning one member raised the issue of capacity building that is done by for NGOs, that is done by Department of Social Development, and yet NCA is talking about capacity building of civil society organizations. We are hoping that we will indeed address this issue and ensure that the funding of NCA is an area that is taken seriously, and that is why we are saying that we are expecting this committee to support us in ensuring that this area is addressed going forward, because it is a challenge. Thank you very much.
CEO, you can't preach from the priest to the converted. But my understanding, honorable members, is that the National Development Agency, when it was conceived, it was not necessarily to be funded by this department only. Because it's not, it's a national which it is able to assist any other department other than social development. And secondly, I do believe very strongly that if this very honorable deputy minister is actually supported even by the private sector, it can reduce poverty and allow the Department of Social Development to do its mandate of actual social soft issues. That is our behavioral change, counseling, all those areas that seem not to be glaring because the issue is hunger. We are very politically matured in this portfolio committee. I am definitely believing that we will work as a collective, irrespective of our political affiliation, because no other political party would have their own membership going hungry. No political party would want their own membership. So we share this particular one. Poverty is a common factor for all of us in this portfolio committee. And I can assure you that we have listened to you guys. I'm going to give to the honorable members to further interrogate issues they want to raise. And then thereafter, we still have, no, it's not a long way to go. It's a very safe, limited space now where we will have to say something about the disabilities, children, etc. and then acknowledge members. I'll say 1, 2, 3, 4. But I'm not closing anyone out. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Kim. I'm so sympathetic to the CEO, Chairperson, because when you are looking at the document, maybe lacks motivation, why should we give them more money? It's not motivating at all. Let me just demonstrate why I'm saying that. For example, Chairperson, the CEO is saying that they have conducted a survey simply because there was a notion that they are not jobs. And that survey, 71% of the people, they know them. But then, the percentage that the target that they are putting for themselves for 5 years is only 20%, 19%, because it says by 2019 they want to be the increase of 90% to 90%. In other words, the difference between the 71 and the 90 to 90 is only 90. And really, for 5 years, then it tells us that their marketing strategy, they don't have the marketing strategy. Secondly, I mean, when you look at the issue of the ECB that they are supporting currently, they are saying they are supporting 298 ECBs. Center. Again, the increase to 2019 is 375. When you translate into the background, when you do the breakdown, it's 57. The difference is 57, which then goes to only 11.8 per year. That is really not motivating to me. Everything further, what I want to understand, because I think even if we are waiting for the master plan of the issue of the ECB, especially on the issue of the infrastructure, maybe now that even the department is here, they must really explain to us, because most of the ECBs in our area, they are privately owned. So now they are the members own that ECB. So are they saying that they are going to renovate the infrastructure that does not belong to government? Because really, I didn't hear that even from the department. Maybe if that can be clarified, because that might cause a problem in our community if they go out to renovate a property that does not belong to government. Not unless they will be renovating those that are already belonging to government, because we have those centers that belong to government. I'll come to the next one.
Thanks, Jen. Just a quick one, a point of clarity here. It seems to me that the NDA is only working with the civil society organization. It does not deal with the community organization. They does not deal straight with the community on the ground. So my question would be, how do you market yourself? How do you make sure that those civil society organizations, they know about NDA? Secondly, those civil society are the ones that are already there in society, already made, or do you have any initiatives as an NDA to go and work with communities and suggest to them that, look, we have this kind of funding as long as you organize yourself with civil society organization. Then the other question that is a follow-up, you are saying you have trust and trust sites funded on food security programs. Where are those sites? If you can just clarify us. And food security programs, like what? Because in some of the areas and what level you can find that there's only a soup kitchen that is taking place. We just deal with those civil society that are providing their food programs. How? What kind of food programs? Because to me, I don't care with the honorable member when they say this document is very silent, because to me it lacks some programs that talk to the poorest of the committee level, so it can be sustainable, it can be understandable. But if it's just a food security problem, as much as I know, in our city train, there is a soup kitchen. On the soup kitchen is from the municipality, this is funded by the municipality. Just those guarantees, I check up this.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and I think some of my colleagues regarding the awareness program in rural and urban areas. How do you do that, and if you've done so on? Then on the ECD programs on the infrastructure improvements, what sort of improvements are done? And wouldn't this property belong to, and if it is private property, do you still assist with improving? I see that there's 1,422 jobs created through the funding project. How many of these jobs are sustainable? And also, where are your indicators in writing?
When it comes to financial, the audit statement, just tell us that, you know, we should stand with that, with the auditor. And then something else, did the auditor ever do performance audit? Because personally, you know, just a talk going around within the committee, that when it comes to the project, people have problems. Because that money is given. But then you get the project, there's no project. So there's a need of the partner exactly where are all your projects throughout the country.
Statement that was made by the CFO when he started the presentation, but I did not get the statement. I don't want to misquote him. But he was talking on the issue of the mandate, whether they are not doing the mandate or the budget is based on the mandate. There's something, can he please say it again so that we have an understanding? I did not get that statement.
Thank you so much, Honorable Chair. I'm assuming that the committee will also get a copy of the review done by Treasury once it's in by the department. And then it's just a general question. In terms of the monitoring and evaluation of programs, the 585, what in general was the outcome of these evaluations?
Then I hand it over to the CEO and the CFO. But please help me, while we deal with this entity, we are actually doing it through the DM as well as the DG. Because it's their duty to monitor and evaluate your program. And I'm happy DM because when the officials were introducing themselves, there was a senior position of responsible for integration. So it, for me, that integration would ensure that the programs talk to each other. And I don't think the limitation of the funds is the main. But probably there might be a silo problem. Because even the evaluation or monitoring you read on an MCU was actually the role and duty of the department to oversee and monitor whether you're doing what the mandate they have given you is, what you are doing. How can you actually evaluate yourself? If I could see that you said we will see your evaluation on 23, or I'm miscoaching you. Thank you very much. Maybe you will correct that when you go on there. But I really wish
the program and an amount, not actually a comprehensive political, that tells us that it is sourced from a political direction of transforming the country. So, and secondly, I don't get a link in your presentation that in all these provinces, you will always find other entities that are either municipal entities or departmental entities that get funding from their own mother bodies. That would actually would link your own project with, so that you don't say I've got this little, because they all have a little, but the space and the environment where you want to operate in the target group is still the same. So please engage us. We want to believe in you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairs, Honorable Members. And thank you for the questions and comments in other instances. I just want to, before I zoom into the responses on the questions, to indicate that the targets that we have set here are based on the money that we have at hand. We have made sure that we don't set the targets that are going to go beyond what we have. And hence, in both presentations, myself and the CFO, we were indicating that since the budget is given, we make sure that we set targets that are within the budget. But irrespective of the fact that the budget is given, we have taken a further step of mobilizing resources beyond what we get as a transfer from social development, so that we can do more in terms of what we do. So the targets that are here are based on the amount of money that we get. In terms of the ECDs, just starting with the question on ECDs that we are going to only support 57, it's the amount that we put in terms of each ECD that we support. For example, you might find that what we support around ECD, we support capacity building, which is in terms of the practitioners within the ECD centers. We also support capacity building of management of ECD centers, so that they can manage the ECD centers effectively and ensure that they meet the government expectations as indicated by the Department of Social Development. Thirdly, we support food gardens within the ECDs, so that we can deal with the issue of nutrition for those children, poor children that go to ECD centers in those, as part of the integrated plan as indicated from the Department of Social Development. So we fund those areas, which is capacity building, food security, and lastly, and I indicated here as I was presenting, that on a minimal basis, what we do, because our mandate is very clear in terms of the Act, that we work through civil society organizations. We work through civil society organizations, and as we know in this country, that at the moment, ECD centers are run by civil society organizations, or what we would call NGOs. So what we would do when we fund these civil society organizations through grant funding, what we do, the ECD is registered in the name of a civil society organization. And what we would do, that ECD center would be the ECD center for that particular community. And what we've done, and I'm sure you've been seeing where the Minister of Social Development has been opening these ECD centers that are part of the community, that were renovated with the assistance of
because we are working with the civil society organizations within the community to ensure that there are CCDs that are there. So we are doing this on a very minimal
just to help you. Please respond to the specific question. What will you do? This is Mamuka has ECD set. And now it doesn't meet the standards. But it's not for the community. It's privately owned. And people pay according to my tariff for using it. So the question was very clear that in your establishment, in your renovation, will you include those? But the honorable member was saying, further, if yes, how do you then renovate what is not yours using government funds? So I wanted you to get that question. I think I'm capturing it correctly.
It is an NPO. The NPO, let me explain. The NPO is registered by the Department of Social Development. All the ECD centers are under the registered NPO, non-profit organization. Except an ECD is registered as an NPO for us to be able to fund that ECD center. If it is registered under a private name of a person, we do not fund that. We fund an ECD center that is registered as an NPO. And that NPO, according to Department of Social Development registration process, it would have to have a governance charter, it would have to have a constitution, it would have a number of things that it would have to have.
Sorry, madam. This chairperson must always keep her or his ear on the ground. I can see when members say they want to have made an intervention. Can I offer that opportunity?
Like I said, I'm very sympathetic with this matter. I'm thinking about my words in Malawi, where there are about 70 centers that are privately owned, because I believe they're in the houses that belong to clinics, for example. So what then happens? I was asking that question, moving from that background, because we still have to go to the constituency and explain when they ask us questions. Because the reality on the ground is not the same as what the CEO is saying. There are two different things here. And moving from the climate that I'm on the ground where I'm saying there are about 7 in my world. And like we explained that those people writing insurance, those centers, they pay. So I'm even thinking about that one, the one that does not even have space for that matter. Because moving from moving from my background of being a teacher, I understand why we have to have CCD centers. One of the things clearly to play, you can mention a lot of things, why we have to have that. That one does not even have a yard. Now I'm asking, I really, can the CEO clarify to us that if there are those 7, they are registered as 7 NPOs now in that area. Other areas, they might have 20 or 15, they might have more, because our people see it as a way of also making money for their livelihood. We also need to address that. She must come to our level and make us understand.
We have gone back to the ECDC matter, and I don't think you will, madam, come back, because you had already said you wanted to come the other day. But we are now dealing with NDA as a responsibility in terms of assisting with infrastructure or training of the personnel within the I would wish to send this message, Madam Deputy Minister MDD, that the problem sometimes is that wrong organizations that don't exist are able to access the information that there's something called NDA, and they go and make an application. They have a constitution because they are fully informed. Why, how do you make yourself compliant to the requirements? And you get funding with flying colors because you really, really very, very clear on what the requirements are, what the constitution is supposed to be, and then you are funded. Only to go back that you are not even from that community. And when oversight comes, there is no project, the address is there, everything is there. And I can be honest with you and tell you that I know of many hydroponic projects costing 3 million, 4 million that we have never seen one green leaf. Because it's the very idea that people run away from multi-sectoral. It's because everyone wants to do their own thing, their own style. I don't think I can go and do a hydroponic project with this limitation of the required skill of such a highly technical type of project. So this matter, CEO, I don't think you need to respond with due respect, honorable member. Don't respond to this question because what they are talking about is what I know while being in prison many times or assisted by the same member to go door to door. I know the complaints. It's not that I can tell you of Mood where I've been. I can tell you of the northern areas of the Western Cape. But I do want to say let's take this as an advice and also come back to say how are we going to position ourselves? And I always tap from any source that seems to be available to me. Having listened to the input of the honorable members, I could see if I was an official, which I was before, I could really, really say, let's have bilateral. You seem to know what I want to do. So I think I don't want to encourage you to respond directly, but to continue and finalize it, because something is very flawed in the way you engage in communities. It's because this NPO or NGO matter is a matter that I know all the NGOs that deal with nutrition, they were never there before. They just heard that they're going to be school nutrition and their constitutions were being manufactured on the way to the Department of Education, whether you will be the secretary, whether you will be the treasurer, and they go. But hence, our social development identifies that there's so much percentage of poor people, malnourished children, autism, high mortality rates of social development discovered that, but it has all been going on because people think school nutrition is food. Yet it is dunk, it fills the stomach, does not develop the cognitive part of the physiology because they are given dunk, but food, filling the stomach, no nutrition. That's why some say it is school feeding scheme, because it's feeding, it's not necessarily giving nutrition. I am therefore saying, don't be disappointed, my honorable CEO. We are not to fight you anywhere, and if we cannot trust you and be convinced by you,
we are doomed. So it is my approach that I think this presentation must find its way back, as well as that of SASA must find its way. We're not holding you, DG, holding you to proceed, but we are saying there's still water under the bridge. So you will continue normally. This presentation for us, we are going to make our own report, we are going to discuss the report, we are going to involve you, all these various managers. But what is also important for us is that as we want to improve this document, so that when it is actually appearing in our report, it is clearly demanding to be funded. At no stage will we allow that constructive criticism coming from the member to say, you're not appealing to financiers, and allow this document to be part of our document, and at the end of the day, this portfolio committee does not help you reach the set goals by our minister. We are therefore requesting that at least these, let them come back so that you assist, you intervene into this agency, and you actually beef it up to the level it will be appealing to anybody, so that funding must come your way. And if there is need, there will be many doors who will support you going to say, we think this vehicle is very important for us, please fund them so that poverty can be reduced at any stage. I think I have reached the stage where I think we are through with this presentation, but I still stand as a chair on the constructive criticism that have been put forward. And lastly, you have seen the integration. We spoke about NGA infrastructure, PCDC is just automatically in. So if those responsible for ECDC, then they come in. That's actually how integration is. You can't make a presentation about someone who is also here, who was not part of the preparation of that particular document. Because that's something you will have to say, no, I wasn't part of it. But let me finalize by saying we are true with this. But what we will do, we are true when we are satisfied and we are not offended, but we are open-minded and we want what we want. 100% unqualified, clean audit for the department. That's all our agenda, all of us in this, under this room. But to say, for us to be correct legally, we understand the separation of powers and we have not crossed any line. No, we have not crossed any line. But we don't want to carry red hands here and say, you're wrong here, you're right here. We can only say, can you adjust and amend and make it more palatable, even if it was food and a little bit of salt. But I'm saying, therefore, because legally we are required, I understand the dilemma we have with this portfolio committee. It's the fact that a function that was not part of the department has been brought to the department. And that function is very, very, very important. It deals with the people living with disabilities. It deals with the vulnerable, it deals with children, and it has already been referred to this portfolio committee by the speaker. And therefore, while we have been appraised by the DG in your first input, as well as by the deputy minister in her overall input about the department, to say, can we separate that item as a separate item for the purposes of law, and then say it must be, at least we must be afraid about the process. I know the DG mentioned the work stream that is dealing with modalities as to how is that budget going to be, that function is going to be followed
by this funding into the department, but that's work in progress that you have raised us on, and therefore we want to be very, very professional and very, very law abiding and compliant in terms of taking it into our report. I'm one person who really likes suggesting and avoid any flaws in our work. So can we therefore allow the department to take that opportunity in the way they would want? DM, it's up to you whether you give it to head of department. Then Tina, we want to say what you say at the end. But no one must be worried that we are rejecting any input. We are adding value. We are adding flesh.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you very much for the feedback. I thought, as I've done with the other presentations, and I welcome the Chair's input in terms of us coming back with some more additions to the NDA presentation. I also note that the Chair is closed, but there were just two things that were very important from a policy perspective that I thought I needed to just contextualize before I introduce the other aspects. Chair, I thought that as much as we'll come with the master plan, it's important that the issue FDA and ECT is about community. They must be owned by a community on communal land, and that sets us apart from the NGOs. And I think that's what the CEO needed to explain, that they don't live with Ifrat Yagamangub. It has to be owned, because Yagamangub is a city. It's registered, it has the business part of making money. But here community will have a chairperson, a deputy chair, a secretary, a treasurer. It's the compliance and the governance structure. And that is the one they support. It's the one that is not owned by Mangutu Aiwan, but that is owned by a community under communal governance system. So I thought I needed to assist the CEO in clarifying that.
Last time, I'm tempted to say, can you put our heads together? That point. But please don't be disturbed, Honorable DM, the member who raised this issue. Do you want to have something to say?
No, I think I'm happy about the answer from the deputy minister. So that's exactly what I said. And really, perhaps I put it by saying those that are owned by government, because mostly the communal ones, they are supported by government.
Thank you, Chair. The last point is also to say that I know it will come back with more meetings, that the National Development Agency, part of the bigger part of the work that they are supposed to do is to assist our struggling NGOs with compliance issues towards their sustainability. And that is where the bulk, I know members are looking for how, who ate what, how many food, and, but actually the biggest struggle in NGO funding that also came out of the model and the evaluation was the fact that our, I will encourage the language, our black rural-based NGOs are unable to comply with financial issues because it carries me in the village. And that, you know, makes it difficult for them to access financing towards their sustainability. It stops them from getting further funding. If they are promised 3 years, they fail to comply on the first year, not because they ate the money, or but just because they don't know how. The NDA, part of its bigger mandate, is to assist that part, which is the capacity development, of ensuring that we are able to fund those NGOs that were unable, or NGOs that were not receiving funding, or that doesn't have the capacity to do what Chair said. The ones that have the mental ability and the technical know-how, and rather than them, and we defraud the state. The NGO is supposed to assist and support and build the capacity for compliance purposes so that they are able to raise funds, they are able to report, they are able to stay open and provide the services that we need and that we need to buy from rural-based and previously disadvantaged NGOs. And that is where the biggest capacity and governance budget of the NGA, rather than touch and feel and build and construct, it's the
issues that assist our soft issues in reaching the community. And I think that is what I thought I needed to just summarize the presentation of the NDA to say, Chair, it is those are the two bigger components. It's where we need to push communities to get services and us to ensure their sustainability and our continuity of funding them. And that is where the NDA assists us. Thank you very much, Chair. I just briefly present the issue of disability and children. Chairperson, and the Department of Women, Children and People with Disabilities, as we all know, was established in 2009, and it has three core mandates. The first mandate that it was given was to consolidate and coordinate governance programs. I'm just summarizing a document that you're supposed to have as part B of right at the back. So I'm just going to talk to it, just very high level and specific. So the department was supposed to consolidate and coordinate government programs in terms of women, children, and people with disabilities. And actually, it was supposed to achieve what it did on strategy. Silos, and begin to push and force government departments to work together towards a common goal, but also to work together because they serve the same organization. The second part of the mandate that the department was given was to ensure that South Africa complies with international obligations that the country has to support the international relations department in terms of report writing, because in terms of the area of women, the area of disability and children, I would restrict myself to disability and children, the country has a big burden of international obligations. And while DERCO is the international relations, they deal with multilaterals and bilaterals. And as a result, the country is forever owing reports. So we signed the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. It falls under the threat because DERCO is not necessarily geared up to consolidate the reporting, but they take the brand. So the department was established to ensure that whether it's the United Nations, the Human Rights Council, the African Union, SADC, whatever different regional instrument that the country has ratified, we needed to ensure that the reports, interdepartmental reports are consolidated and put together. The third mandate was to ensure advocacy and mainstreaming. What it meant was that this department needed to run to be the awareness raising. If we talk about teenage pregnancy and young women, the department needed to run a campaign that makes sense and that South Africans understand. Disability awareness and the integration of disabled people, but also facilitate, for instance, in the children's aspect, child participation. So amongst the bigger programs, then the fourth part was institutional support and capacity development. Whether it's of gender equality, disability mainstreaming, child integration, it's all about if the government machinery and all its supporting agencies intended and geared to have the relevant skills and ability to steer the ship to where it's supposed to go. So the government was tasked to develop. And within the advocacy and mainstreaming and institutional support, the department has to provide a lot of policy and research to the broader government mandate. So it became like part of the institutionalization of research and broader information management, where if the Department of Public Service and Administration has to ensure integration of disabled employees or reach 2%, the Department of Women, Children and People with Disabilities, from a disability perspective, has to ensure that there is a reasonable accommodation policy, and they needed to assist the Department of Social of Public Service with the technical expertise. So this department was a technical department that had the experts to support the whole of government. If the Department of Health needed to ensure rehabilitation happens, the Department of Women needed to provide the technical expertise and advice on what will constitute a workable rehabilitation. What did the department plan to do, Chairperson, between April 2014 and April and March 2015? This department has the smallest budget. So there was very little money because this job was to coordinate, not necessarily to implement anything. Starting with the disability program, we've already spoken about the finalization, the
was the review. South Africa is the integrated national supervision strategy that was promulgated in 1997, and it became outdated when we ratified the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities in 2007. So the department has to review the disability policy for the country, and as a result, replace that with the disability policy which we spoke about earlier on, that will enhance and domesticate the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. And that is the policy that is ready, and the department has consulted, and the policy that we spoke about. So according to the annual development plan, the policy must be launched on the 3rd of December, and if need be, it needs to be finalized and be in the station book by the 31st of March, if the deadlines are to move back, as per the Portfolio Committee's advice, and whatever that is. There is part of the problem on disability care that the whole of government has with data and information. How many people are we talking about? So the department has to develop what we call a data management system and a matrix that will act an integrated matrix, so that we are able to advise government on when you talk about disabled people, who are you talking about, how many are you talking about, how do you categorize them, how do you classify them, who are they, and then we'll address, if I have to just make a policy link, start that appeal, because every South African will know what constitutes disability in a South African context. But also, guiding the matrix is intended to assist a service-based definition of disability, because there's no universal definition. So sometimes it's to say, from a grant perspective, using the guidelines that are in the matrix, this is how we define disability. If it's about employment, this is how you define an employee who needs to benefit from the reasonable accommodation. This is about sports, that is the classification, sporting code, that the person will be evaluated. The matrix chair, we have developed it simultaneously with the policy, so it will, as soon as we get the policy introduced, we will come to the portfolio committee to introduce the matrix, the disability policy matrix as well. So that one is also at a consultation stage, and we are ready. The matrix is supported by our relationship with SSA in terms of running the disaggregated census. What happens, Jefferson, because of the way the census questions were structured, the country was unable, even if it's indicative, to come out with how many, you know, to come out with an indicative figure of how many disabled South Africans. So as we went with the Statistics General and the team, because as I said, the department was a technical department, we then proposed a follow-up census study, like a household-based follow-up census study. The survey has been tested.
Excuse me, Honorable DM. I'm being notified that the last bus will leave in 20 minutes' time. Yes, but we think we need your last word in terms of the children, and then we are through.
A problem, Chairperson. Just to wrap up is that we'll send the list of the many reports on disability, for instance, the economics of disability, that is in the process of being finalized. With the policy, employment in the public service, and the many, which were reports that are supposed to inform policy, which is research reports. The list will be submitted. Those are the reports that must be finalized by the Joint Secretary to inform policy development by other departments. Chairperson, with regards to children, there is the profiling of South Africa's children in terms of the Convention on the Rights of the Child. The program is called Ulwazi Ngabantwana, which is supposed to, it's an IT-based system where children are loaded and all of their status are put, if they receive a grant, are they in an ECD, the status, and that is supposed to assist the country in terms of producing the data that is required as per the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child. The system has been developed, the system is operational, the system has been tested, and the children are currently being loaded. And that whole IT system will have to be migrated to social development and be integrated in the social development IT system. also further make the Imigonzo and even the program to be institutionalized, because the children will now be on an IT system. When they share this in the Eastern Cape, the share will have access to whatever the child has said, the children's IDs. It also supports the program of Home Affairs in terms of the registration of children, the reopening of offices of children in all hospitals, care to support the registration drive of children. It's one of the things that the department works with social Home Affairs to ensure that no mother leaves the hospital without a birth certificate, so that we deal with the issues of ID, late registration of children on grants, and that program is being rolled out, and where there are maternal wards, there are now staff that are being employed to ensure that every child that born is registered in entry. Those are some of the programs shared. The country reports are all true. We'll share with the portfolio committee all the country reports that are ready for depositing. The baseline country reports are in the process of being finalized. Then the last point is the MNE for both children and disabilities. That's in order, and it is, Chair, if I may say, as I conclude, it is among the functions, because it's a monitoring and evaluation system that monitors the whole of government. And as we are awaiting the functions, some of the functions that we will be looking at, would they not be better placed at the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation? Because those systems, we might not do justice at DSC, but we will look at which interactivity of the existing MNE system in DSC and then the multi and interdepartmental aspects and the powers and functions the Minister of Social Development has to oversee other ministers. And then based on that, we'll be able to determine whether these functions are going to DSC and what support and how to enhance the support. The budget is very small, Chair. Let me tell you the budget. The disability budget is 14 million.
Excuse me, I don't think members are listening. They are actually a free job because they really have no transport.
Thank you, sir. Now, you said we must be legal. The total budget is 25 million. That's all we are saying for both the programs about line compensation of employees and both programs. Thank you very much, Chair.
Can I declare this meeting closed so that whatever we want to.